This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't a part of my judgment, my own sweet time didn't teach what I thought. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, my sinners. Oh my God, you made it to another one. Episode 136. Holy crap, I cannot believe I have done this many. And this one today is long overdue. My very old friend, the crucial dude himself, Mr. Skyler Kroom of He Is Legend, is here. Well, he was here. We recorded this like a couple weeks ago, but you know, I always feel like the late night host thing, like, we got a great show. Seth Rogen is here. And by Seth Rogen, I maybe mean Howard Jones because they sound exactly the same if you listen to that episode. But hey, I digress. Great episode today for real. And I had so many questions for Skyler because that band pretty much dissolved, I don't know, 14 years ago, something like that. And here they are, as strong as ever, killing it on the festival circuits and on the radio and crowdfunding and all this crazy stuff. And it was just so nice to catch up with Skyler, one of the best in the business. Before we jump on into that, I want to thank you all so much for listening to this, whether it's your first time aboard or whether you've listened to all 135 other shows. It's great to have you. And as always, I want to remind you, you can get in touch with me. It's very easy. I have an email address. It is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We're on all the socials. You can follow me on there, including Facebook. Don't sleep on Facebook. Still a thing. Believe it or not, Facebook's still out there. I checked this morning, facebook.com. It pops right up with that horrible blue color. Why did they pick that color for the most iconic website maybe of all time? Horrible color. Not my favorite. But hey, regardless, we have a Facebook page. Shout out to Neil, Melissa, and Julia for running that for me. And I'm sure there's some people that aren't so happy with what I've done. I'm talking too much about myself, maybe relating things back to me, cutting off the guests when they speak. You know, these are things that I tend to do. I like doing them. And if you are unhappy, feel free to call the hate line. 1-657-666-HATE. H-A-T-E. Call me, leave me a message, let me have it, lay into me if you want. A couple weeks ago, Anthony Green, I thought it was a great episode. A lot of people agreed. But hey, I'm sure there's somebody out there that was unhappy. So let me have it. Ring me up. Talk some shit. Do what you got to do. Again, the number 1-657-666-HATE. In other news with me, I am about to head out on the Vans Warped Tour for 8 shows with my band Silverstein. We are playing Toronto, Cleveland. Why did I say Toronto? It's Toronto. Everyone knows, well, maybe not everyone knows, but if you know, you know, that you don't pronounce the second T in Toronto. It's Toronto, not Toronto. Anyways, we are playing Toronto, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit, Buffalo, Scranton, beautiful Scranton, Boston, and New York City. So please, tickets available now. Some of them are going to sell out for sure, so make sure you get on that. Don't sleep on those tickets. I'm very, very excited to be playing Warped Tour for the last time ever, as they are canceling it after this year, which is very, very sad. Another show we're doing, if you're in Quebec, bonjour, merci. I don't speak French despite being Canadian. Check out our show in Quebec City. It is for Festival d'Été. We are playing with Avenged Sevenfold and Bullet for My Valentine. Should be rocking. Put up the devil horns. Shout out to goaltender Max Legacy. He will be there. And I am looking forward, as always, to just be in the great province of Quebec. I want to remind you of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Basically, if this one a week bullshit is not enough for you, if you need more content, you want bonus episodes, you want to talk to me, you want to watch me answer questions on a computer screen, maybe play some tunes, maybe you want Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, patches sent to your house every 3 months, or you want to join a great community of other like-minded people that are into the same music, the same culture, and of course, also big fans of the show, check it out. For as little as $6 a month, it gets you in. It really is a good time. And also, we're working on that being ad-free. That's going to launch pretty soon as well. So many perks there. Also, it really just helps me out. It helps me keep the show going. Believe me, without the All Access Club, no way in hell I would be at episode 136. I would have given up years ago. So here we are. Thank you so much to all the sinners in the All Access Club. You know who you are. I know who you are. And thank you from the bottom of my Canadian heart, English-Canadian heart. Shout out to Tommy Vext for being on the podcast last week. Great episode. Go back and check it out if you missed it. Yes, he might have dropped an N-bomb. It was bound to happen sooner or later. I'm just glad it was an African-American. And once you listen to that one, go back, because we have like 133 more of them. So anyways, hey, let's jump in to this week's episode and my conversation with the crucial dude, Skylar Kroom, of He Is Legend.
Don't you think it's strange?
Hello, Skylar.
Hey, Shane.
Dude, it's been a long time.
It has been a very long time.
How are things, man?
Things are great. Things are really good.
Is that a baby crying in the background?
That was a kitten.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
That was a cat.
Damn, you've been busy. No, a cat is a little more easy to deal with than a baby, usually.
Yeah, she's just a beast, and she needs a lot of attention. Kind of like most babies, I would imagine.
I don't have any babies. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know either, but I've seen a few in my day.
Absolutely, man. So what's up, man? What's new? You just hanging around?
Yeah, we're kind of off the road right now, waiting for the end of summer stuff to come around, whatever that may be. We've confirmed some stuff, but we haven't announced it, so I'm not, dropping whatever yet. But
no, don't give me the exclusive, okay? Don't spill the beans.
No, our whole spoiler alert situation is like up in arms now. So,
what do you mean?
I don't want to be the guy to let any cats out of any bags, you know. So
no. I get it. The amount of people that have called me back after I've done these things and been like, hey, I wasn't allowed to announce that. Can you go back and edit that out?
I'm sure.
All the time. I never mind.
I'm sure that's the thing. That's why, I can say that we have cool things coming up,
good.
But I can't say what they are yet. But cool things are coming.
Cool things are always, right? Well, dude, it's really good to have you, man. We go way back. We go way back, like I'm talking like
so far
12,
back.
15 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Which is really crazy to think about. But what's crazy, thinking about you guys is I always was a fan of your band and a fan of you as a front man and maybe not your guitar player because he always kind of scared me.
Right.
A little bit.
The boy.
Yes. Scary, scary man, but that's okay.
Yeah, he's a teddy bear. You just got to give him a big hug.
But it was crazy because, all of a sudden it was like, all right, this band's done. Like, and I'm talking about done after that Under Oath tour we did together in Canada back in 2004. I think it was 2004, maybe 2005. And it was like, okay, well, that sucks. Like, this band's breaking up. And then, you do the thing where you come back, and I've seen it 1,000 times, and so have you. Band comes back. They put it together, kind of a record that whatever. They do
right.
A couple reunion shows. They maybe get some festival money.
Yeah,
cash
10-year
in.
Anniversary shows and whatnot. Yeah.
Then they fuck off again. And
sure.
What's so inspiring about you guys, it's like, no, you're back, and you're bigger and better than ever.
Oh, thank you, man. I mean, coming from you, that means a ton. As you remember, the day will be infamous for us because, we lost a very dear friend that Adam and I actually, he introduced the two of us.
Yeah.
And I remember that, I've since played that place in Canada, and I'm drawing a total blank on where it
was.
Was
it Winnipeg?
I mean, you know, it might have been Winnipeg. We were in a back alley.
Yeah, Winnipeg at the Garrick. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, and I just remember that being like one of the most visceral experiences of my life. As you know, like Adam flew home that night, and we like drove in. I don't know. It was just a very strange time. And then after that, you know, we kind of took that, you know, I don't necessarily want to blame anyone for what happened to the band at that point in time, but we just needed a moment. And it seemed to us that we were kind of like blackballed for dropping off of a tour. So, I mean, but it was also very discouraging, and we were, you know, smoking a lot of weed back then. Not that we haven't quit that, but you know, the paranoia of what happens in the music scene. I mean, the bands are always going to be the least respected to some extent, you know? So we were just kind of paranoid. And then the state of the music back then was, it was just in a place, you know, I don't know. We just felt like out of place, and that we weren't very happy with the way the scene was going in general, being typecast to some extent. And we needed that hiatus. I think we all learned about each other and learned about what we really wanted as a group. And none of us really stopped seeing each other. I mean, like Matt had a band of his own. We all got jobs and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very dark time. But also, you know, I got my feet wet in the film industry, and
yeah,
a lot of crazy things happened over that period of time that helped us to really kind of pinpoint what It Hates You was all about, and then move forward with that. And then, yeah, it was after that, you know, with minor hiccups, we basically haven't stopped.
No,
you know,
no. And I mean,
after It Hates You, It Hates You is when the hiatus kind of like came. But I think it all came because that album needed to marinate on people for a while. And I mean, kids still, like, you know, the kids who aren't screaming "I am Hollywood" are the kids that are like It Hates You's your best work. It's your color in the shape. I'm like, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, but, no, yeah. It's just the timing and everything was so crazy because, you know, you mentioned the paranoia. I got to remember just at that point being like, what do you mean they're going home? What do you mean they're not like going to be a band anymore? What do you mean this, like, all this stuff? Like, I was like, they're at their peak right now.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like finding out about this band. You know, when you did that tour, you were opening up for us, and it's like everyone knows about this band, and this is like, everything's being built up, and then it's like right at the very peak when it was all about to happen, you're like,
yeah.
Nah. And it was just for me, from my perspective, it was really a shame. But
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think our headspace at the time, though, you know, you have these blinders on, and then when there's like, when tragedy strikes, it's just, you know, I knew that going home was like going to be, it was going to kind of taint us, but it was also like we lost a dear friend, and like we needed that moment. And I don't think ever at that point where it wasn't at that moment that we said we can't do this anymore. I mean, we obviously had a bit of a, you know, we had to back up and regroup, which meant us dropping off of that tour with you guys, which was like probably the biggest tour we had ever done. But we also, you know, we rode really hard for a while, just tour after tour after tour. So I think being burnt out, and then the midst of that, it was like, oh shit, what just happened? Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't take it back at all. I mean, the craziest thing is that, like, what we learned from that is who we were as people and where we belong in music. And I think the train that we've been on since then, and since this juxtaposition now, is it's given us a footprint, you know, like a definitive sound that we all can agree upon. So,
well,
I don't know. It was definitely a crazy time.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, the whole idea of gauging your success, it's still like always difficult to know kind of where you're at. But back then, you know, it's really harder because now everybody has their fucking stats, you know. You got your, this is how many Facebook likes you have, and this is how many you know, I post an Instagram and this is the reach, or how many people listen to my song on Spotify, or all this stuff. Back then, like, other than record sales, which never really meant anything anyways, all you could do is, like, are the kids singing the songs? Like, are there people here?
Isn't that so interesting, man? Like, don't you think it's, like, really put a darkness over what the music scene even is now? Like, day by day, it seems to get darker, as much as, like, how we're a slave to this algorithm. Whereas normally it was like, you know, I remember me and Adam just like going into the UNCW library to photocopy old medical journals for flyers, you know, and like,
right,
just stuff like trying to get, that's one thing that we did with this, with Few, when we crowdfunded, was to try to make it important to have a street team, have fans that want to be supportive, like the way we used to when we were growing up. Because Facebook and all the things that you have to do as a promoter these days, it's amazingly simple. I mean, at least from a computer illiterate standpoint, it seems like going on and just being like, okay, I created a group and here, you share it on your, you know, it just seems like there's less work for what is required now.
Right. And I'm just not a fan of any of that stuff at all. You know, I guess I'm just old, but I still like the idea of you know, on the ground promotion, like, hey, I'm in this band, you know, come to this show, you know,
walk around,
like,
mall, you know,
whatever though. But no, it's changed. It has changed so much. And slave to the algorithm is like a great quote. I love that. And it's just so damn true.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's also nice to see. Like, I see you guys like out there still doing it, and even and from all walks of life, like, you know, back, Josh Moore from Beloved is one of my dearest friends, and I saw him the other day in Carborough. It's just like, these people still have these beautiful lives, like with beautiful music. They're still like hoofing it, and it's amazing, man. It's crazy now that we're in our, you know, we're getting up there in age.
What's Josh from Beloved doing now? I love that guy. What a great guy.
He put out an album a couple years back, and I'm sure he's working on new music. I went to a CD release party, and he, you know, he sold out the Cat's Cradle in North Carolina in Carborough. So I mean, it's beautiful, you know. And my buddy Ryan from Box Bomb he's just got his project, The Dead Tongues. He's like out with a big folk band right now overseas, and Jared from Classic Case is he's out doing Must Be the Holy Ghost, which is like super trippy, you know, liquid light projection show, and it's just like kind of a one man band thing, and but a two man operation with the light show. It's beautiful just to see these things happening still to this. It's great.
Funny. It's funny, you know. I think it's weird how, you know, I'm 37. I think you're around my age. I assume you're about my age.
I'm 35. Yeah.
And it's funny how these people we're talking about are all kind of in our same generation. It's funny how we get our feet wet really early on, you know, in our like late teens, early 20s. And I mean, at least for my case, I can't speak for everyone, but, you know, we don't know what the fuck we're doing. And we have the success and we feel this sort of passion about something, but then whatever it is, if it's success or if it's pressure of seeing your friends grow up and have real lives and get real jobs and start having kids, I feel like there's a pressure there that it's like, am I still doing this bullshit that I did when I was in my early 20s and my teens? Like, and then once you get over that, or you live a little bit of that adult life, then you realize, hey, this shit's actually important to me. I want to do this again. I'm passionate about this.
Right. And then, you know, I've always made the joke of like, you know, you're putting down your guitar to like flip a burger, you know, which at the end of the day, it seems like, you know, what I mean by that is that nothing can compare to this thing that you've given, especially if you have that, if you have talent, you know what I mean? Yeah. Without mentioning any names, look at all the people that are still doing it that like you can't stand their music. I mean, not to bring negativity into it at all, but
yeah.
You see certain things that, like, people who are still going and they have this, you know, this quality where there's stardom and there's, you know, there's immense talent, and to watch that be squandered. I mean, again, I can go back to some of my favorite bands that haven't, you know, like I mean, obviously Mutoid Man's amazing. Cave-In was my favorite band. You know, that was like one of those bands that we just could not stop playing. Cave-In on the road forever. I mean, it still pops up.
I love Cave-In.
Same with Code 7.
Oh, I love Code 7. I haven't thought about that band in forever.
Oh, man.
What an underrated band. People need to check out that band. Wow.
Yeah. Definitely.
So ahead of their time.
Yeah, all their albums should really be like studied by these young kids that are coming up. I mean, I hope that there's even in that, if this podcast does one thing, it's like, you know, there's bands out there that pave the way for you and you might not even know it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, it's great that that's a finite thing, you know, that we can go back and continue to study.
No, totally, man. So, you know, I always felt like your band was, and you even already mentioned it, you felt a little bit like outcasts. You never really felt like you fit into the whole scene thing. Being a non-Christian band on Tooth and Nail Records probably didn't help.
Not at all.
You know, a bunch of those things were definitely pushing and pulling you guys in different ways. Before we talk about that, I want to talk about your influences growing up. I know you played drums at an early age in a family band. I read that somewhere. And, you know, you're into a lot of different, you know, rock and roll stuff. So talk to me a little bit about that and how that all led to you being a misfit in the scene.
Well, we all grew up playing. Adam's been playing guitar since forever. With our friend that passed when we were on that tour with you, he was in a band with them in high school. Then Matt and Adam and Steve all started in high school playing. And so I went to a different high school. I grew up playing drums. It was in marching band. I was in jazz band. And I played in a Southern gospel band with my mother and my stepfather. So that was basically my intro into music, was just doing all these things, like really focusing on the drums. Like that was my biggest thing. I played, you know, in a garage band with friends and whatnot, and then moved on to like playing at church and stuff like that until, you know, I started to step out of that realm and into more like, you know, getting into all the different kinds of heavy metal and whatnot. But also still being, you know, a drummer at heart, like listening to Dave Matthews, because Carter Beaufort was insanely, you know, whatever. It'd be like something that I was into. I don't know. My musical influence has changed so much. I mean, now I like everything from, you know, the albums I'm looking at right now is a Burzum album and a Gillian Welsh album and a Daft Punk album, like right, like three in a row. But I mean, those are some of my favorite things. You know, I love electronic music. I love hip hop a lot. Like the shittier the better. You know, but we all kind of have those influences. I mean, I think they kind of came along. Obviously, Nirvana and like White Zombie and Pantera are the bands that we found our sound in that influence. You know, those are the bands that we wanted to not maybe emulate is not the right word, but, you know, wearing that on our sleeve was like our biggest components.
Absolutely. Wow, Burzum. Don't go killing anybody, okay?
No, I try not to.
I've got
some willpower these days.
Wow. No, that's cool, man. So that all ties into, you know, this He Is Legend in this band, and, you know, obviously there's an element of, you know, punk rock and like underground music, because a lot of the stuff, you know, you're talking about are kind of like stuff that you see in the mainstream, whether it's radio or whether it's, you know, on TV or whatever. But you must have gotten into punk rock somehow that led you into this band and into a hardcore scene and on Tooth and Nail Records.
We grew up, you know, our manager was the same guy that managed Dead Poetic, Nate Mallon.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. And so it was just, you know, we were playing with Dead Poetic. We loved them so much. And we were playing with, you know, Norma Jean and Beloved and all these bands. Ludacris back then it was.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I remember.
And it was just like we're playing with these people. Obviously, Stretch Armstrong was like not far away from us. So we kind of, we were like, well, Stretch Armstrong's on that label, and they're not necessarily a Christian band. Like, we could, this is fine. And it made sense because those were the bands that we wanted to tour with, you know, like we see like Dead Poetic, Beloved, and Ludacris signed to Tooth and Nail, and they're on the road and they're happy. So, you know, when you're 20 something and want to get on the road, because, you know, back then it was like, you can't get on the road unless you have label representation. So we just did it, you know, and for the longest time, I mean, it was great. I couldn't take those years back, but we were definitely put in positions where we would make some people mad because we weren't exactly a Christian band, not really trying to, you know, burn bridges, but we just acted like a cock rock band. That's what we've always, what we've always essentially been, you know, just whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing that happened. I mean, that story alone has been told time and time again.
It has. It's an interesting story, though, and it's still one that I think people, you know, are curious about. I mean, there was no conversation when you signed the contract. Like, there's no stipulation in the contract that says, you know, you must believe in God.
Yeah.
And you must be able to recite these passages. Like, I don't think that's in any recording contract.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, but maybe the half the thing was, go ahead.
Well, was there a conversation at all about that when you signed?
No, I mean, and I even remember asking questions like, you know, this is just like, you know, we are moral dudes. We're not, you know, we're not scumbags. So, and I think that was really the case. But, you know, once we were in it and we were playing all these shows with these people that are like, you know, bumping the Bible, and it got more and more uncomfortable for us because we didn't want to lie, you know, like the last thing we wanted to do was be like untrue to our fans. So of course we would, you know, if there's a bar at the venue, then we're going to drink, you know, like, and we smoke cigarettes. So I'm going to smoke with the fans and not like in a corner hiding. And
right.
When we were young, you know, it was all about being out there in the crowd and like hanging out with the kids. And we still pride ourselves on just being normal dudes and always kind of just being available. And
yeah.
That was important to us because, you know, we would play with some bands that were really, you know, hiding the fact that they do the same things as everyone else, you know? And I just didn't, it struck me as odd, but I mean, I get it if that's your message or, you know, you're catering to a certain group, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't an ideal match, but I think at the time it was really just, who cares? We want to put a record out. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to help us. So.
Absolutely. And put out a record you did. I Am Hollywood is a record that still is celebrated and loved by your fans, despite it being a lot different than your new stuff. But I do kind of have a lot of respect that you still play, you know, material from that era.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the most fun, you know, because people really want that. And I think because we had such a sordid history of being a bit more like erratic as a band and you know, as we would maybe not show up to a show, you know, I mean, we were young,
right.
Young punks and I mean, those days, obviously we were a lot more immature and this thing we were doing was, you know, built in rock and roll because that's kind of an attitude. But now it's different because we're older now, more mature, and our fans are also, you know, they grew up with us, so
yeah.
They can appreciate all the things. And maybe the few kids that don't know much about us, when they hear The Seduction live, you know, it really strikes a chord with us and them to see people like still singing along to those songs and really amps to hear it and surprised that, you know, we might end a show with I Am Hollywood or, you know, something, even, you know, throw a slow tune in there off of Suck Out the Poison or something.
Yeah.
It's cool. I mean, and everybody knows that's the format. Like, you know, you gotta play the moneymaker, I guess, is what people would say. But I've come to not necessarily enjoy it, but I understand why it's a necessary evil. And I think we all kind of.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you can't deny on stage when you do it, when that song comes on, like, I'm so pumped that it's on because everyone in the crowd is pumped that it's on. So, I mean, it's not that I'm ever like, this sucks, because in the moment, it's amazing.
But yeah.
You know, thinking about it is not.
Right, right. Yeah. No, that makes total sense.
I mean, I think what we're on right now is just a path of like nostalgia because of it's changed so much, you know? And now that we've been playing these big like Danny Wimmer shows.
Yeah.
It's just been it's a different kind of feeling because you feel young again because you're, you know, playing at 1 p.m. and you're, you know, you're rocking with all of your friends and some bands that you like grew up worshiping. Last month in Carolina, we played with Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots. It's like, what is happening? You know,
right.
Like, where am I?
Right. And yeah, it's kind of crazy. Those bands are still bands, right? With no lead singers, but you know, hey, whatever.
Exactly.
That's for another conversation. Definitely. Yeah. The whole, you know, your resurgence and, you know, being on Spine Farm Records, which is a label known for radio play, and doing these Danny Wimmer festivals, which is completely different than your old, you know, I don't know. I almost want to say like your old life. It's like there's, you know, there's the version one of He Is Legend with the first, you know, two records, and now there's the new version.
Yeah.
And, you know, you make those things coincide. You know, you play old stuff like I was talking about, but in a way, those people coming to see you at the Danny Wimmer festivals, do they know about the old He Is Legend? Do they care? Do they just want to hear the new record? Do they just want to hear the jams that are, you know, being played on the radio? Like, what's the vibe there?
I think that the vibe is always, you know, you can tell when you have captivated a crowd. I think, at least, I mean, if you're a performer and this is your life, like, you figured that part out. And I think for us, you know, we've always been kind of no frills, no like pyro or scrims or anything, you know, it's just like, it's like, you know, maybe a backdrop and the riffs. so I think that people respect that kind of grassroots rock and roll, heavy metal vibe that we can offer. And I also think that the fans are more excited that we're giving up old stuff. So they're kind of in their minds, they're running the show, you know, like they're in the pit, right. They're the ones singing along, they're having a blast. And so for us to feed off that energy, I think would any of the people who have not heard of us before are going to possibly look into our back catalog or at least know that like, oh, this is a legit thing. It's not just like, I'd rather have those fans in there that are stoked about everything else to show people that, oh yeah, this is old, you know, or this is like band I heard on the radio, which I always liked when I was young, you know. You see, like, I remember like watching Chevelle open up for Power Man by 1,000 and like and just being like, oh man, this band's sick, but I'd notice people in the crowd like knew the songs. I was like, oh, I'm missing out on something.
You know? Right, right.
So mm-hmm. that's what I hope that those Wimmer Fests do. Obviously, that's a different animal, and I would probably prefer a club show any day of the week. But it's a necessary thing to go out there and just, you know, be the young band again, rock out, show people what you got.
It's great. I wonder if the people coming out to these shows, though, if the music has any relevance from 2004 to today, you know, like, sure, everyone's the old fans are there rocking out, but somebody just walks in and goes, wait, this is different. Like, what's going on? This isn't the same as you know, the songs from Few, you know? So,
I think we do a good, like, you know, when we go in to choose a set list, I think we try to cater to the crowds that we're playing in front of, you know? And so the preparation part, we're writing that set for our fans in general, but we also are keeping in the back of our mind that like a lot of people probably haven't heard that. So, you know, if we go out with Seven Dust, we did that tour with them. We, you know, we play like all the drop tune heavy stuff because like that's what their fans are gonna, you know, our fans aren't coming to that show. I mean, maybe our most diehard fans, but you know, to see us play 30 minutes for you know, at a club show for $35 or whatever. It's like, I don't think a lot of our fans are going to be like, I'll catch them next time. But
right.
The ones who do come, I think they're still pleasantly surprised. And then we're, you know, playing these radio bangers or whatever.
Sure.
But I actually can't answer that. I don't know that answer to that question. Because I would like to think that all of our songs translate even to the, you know, the 45 and up crowd that's coming because Billy Idol's playing. Like, I would hope if they stumbled upon it and saw what was going on, they'd be like, oh, yeah. I mean, our tunes have a throwback vibe that I think could capture a lot of audiences. Maybe not every band's fan base on the bill, but
no. Just something I wanted to ask you about. So very interesting development is with you guys crowdfunding your last album last year, raising over $70,000 to make the record. But what I don't understand is how now you're hooked up with a pretty big label with Spine Farm. So how did that happen? Did you guys raise all this money and then all of a sudden the music industry's like, oh shit, people care about this band. Let's sign them. Is that the way that worked out?
That was what we thought was going to happen. And we were weighing our options because, you know, our tooth and nail contract was up and we essentially had to kind of figure out what we wanted to do. I mean, did we want to do a record for X amount of dollars? That was, you know, our main concern was that we didn't want to go backwards in recording, meaning it needed to be at least as long as we needed for the process. And also, you know, we basically just took the budget from Heavy Fruit and worked our way backwards as to like, what do we need for this? What do we need for this? Okay.
Right.
Then we
got it.
So we budgeted it out and the way that we decided we could do it. And obviously crowdfunding was an interesting, crazy learning experience. And, when we got down to all of the, after all the tracks were laid down and everything sounded good and we started mixing and mastering, we were wondering if like how we were going to handle the one thing that we didn't really budget for was like a marketing and distribution thing. Cause we were just going to send the records out of our house, but then there wouldn't really be in record stores and, that was something that we were like concerned about because obviously we really needed, I mean, that's key. And also like not having it shown anywhere. I mean, not having a marketing team, we really were just the band members working on this and the people that we kind of hired along the way. So we reached out to a friend of ours who we've been friends with, Darren, our A&R guy now at Spine Farm. And he's just, you know, kind of been a friend, give us advice along the way for a long time. And he brought up the fact that he was like, you know, well, we could do this and this, and then like, why don't you just license it to us so we can take that part away, that, you know, marketing and, the distribution thing, so we could have a worldwide release.
Cool.
So it ended up being something that we were like, you know, this makes sense. And it takes a lot of this stress off our plates, because after doing all the perks and like having that go so crazy, I mean, like everything went out, but you know, some things were lost in customs, some things were more expensive than we thought. It was just a learning,
right? Having to deal with customer service of fans that are like, well, I supported you guys like months ago and I don't have my fucking record, and you're like,
right, exactly.
You're like, I'm just a singer, man, but you can't play. Like, you can't play the "I'm just a singer" card anymore when it's actually, you know, you're organizing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's definitely could be stressful and sort of, I don't know, just not something you want to deal with.
Yeah, and then, you know, you've got all the little tiny things like, oh, maybe this one run was wrong, or what, somebody moved and their addresses keep coming back and you can't, you know, just little things that normally would be left up to a team. But honestly, I think when we decided to sign with Spine Farm, it was out of just like, okay, these people want to help, which is I think that's the first time that we felt like, oh, and obviously they, just like anyone else, they want to help because, you know, they'll reap some benefits off of it, but it seemed genuine and we were happy to have some relief in that. And also it was time to start worrying about getting on tour, rehearsing, you know, getting tour merch and all the things that popped up right after that. It was just, you know, it was a long process. And I think that if a band has a fan base already and they're exploring that avenue, I think it's a great tool, especially to kind of prove your worth and get out there and get your hands dirty in it. That being said, I don't know if I would do it again.
Right. That was my next question.
Yeah. I don't think it's something I would want to do for every album, but this one, it was just important, you know, like going from Tooth and Nail to Tragic Hero, releasing records and finally being at a place where you could be a free agent and really just work hard for yourself. It was something we really needed to do to prove mainly to ourselves, but it gave us more of a grassroots, I would say street team, or, you know, a connection with our fans that we've never had before.
Totally.
And it kind of lifted the veil of the way we used to be, you know, and in this ambiguity of the band.
Totally. Well, I think it's good to do that at that point you are in your career, you kind of, you know, see where you're at, where you stand with your fans, with the industry and everything. And I'm sure you guys were pleasantly surprised that you were like, holy shit, all these people want to support us. And a label that's, you know, not just Jimmy's Records down the street, you know, this is a real label, wants to help you. That's an amazing, amazing feeling that must have given you a bit of a spring in your step now moving forward. And you're on these Danny Wimmer festivals and you're like, yeah, we fucking belong here, you know?
It feels like that. I mean, it feels like big stages and stuff. I mean, it was just like the next step in the progression. But, and it's also another thing, you know, prove that you still got it and you're still rockers, you know? I mean, that's kind of, it's like, yeah, they're still rockers. They're still rocking. So, I mean, we, obviously very humbled by what happened. We chose to do an all or nothing option with Indiegogo, where if we didn't meet our mark, we got no money. So,
oh man.
Yeah.
I don't know much about crowdfunding. That's even scarier. Cause it's like,
it was,
if
terrifying.
Cause you got to think about it. If you don't get there, is that like the end of the band? Like, is that almost like a breakup?
I think that's where we were at, you know,
right.
because to us, it was like, we believe wholeheartedly that our fans want to hear another album. I mean, Heavy Fruit hadn't been out too long, and it was, you know, it was like one of those things where, well, if we want to do it, we need to strike while the iron's hot. And we're like at the end of this album cycle, and we're also at the end of this label, and it didn't seem like negotiations were going to do what we wanted. And it was like, man, should we just try to do this for ourselves? So, I mean, and I was the last one to really jump on board with crowdfunding because I was super nervous about how it looked, you know? And I know a lot of, like, especially, like, you know, bands in the hardcore scene are like, these fucking pussies, like, you know, they need their stipend or whatever, you know, like, but we essentially just had to break everything down to where, like, how could we live and continue to have our houses and our, you know, like pay our bills essentially and make this record work. And here's how much it's going to be. But for us, it was like, okay, well, we'll prove this on our own. If we can make this work and we can hit this mark, then yes, it's worth it. But if we don't hit this mark, then we should make a record, but maybe it shouldn't be the top priority of the band. And it should, you know, it should be something that we just do on our own.
Right.
Cheaply, you know, however.
Well, it's worked out nicely, and you know, it's a far cry from where you were back in 2004, being scared kids, paranoid, you know, not feeling like you belonged, and now it's like, you know what, we're here and we're here to stay. Which is great to see. And I think you're right about, maybe you can do a crowdfunded record like once. But if you do every record as a crowdfunded record, I think that's like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It's like, if you have success, then, you know what I mean? It's like, you kind of have to prove that you have success and then that's what you do to prove it. Once you have it again, I don't know. Maybe I'm way off base, but.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think the main thing that we used that for was that we wanted to corral the fan base into one general spot, you know? Yeah. So knowing that we pushed this on our social medias or whatever, but everybody had to visit this place where we were releasing information about what was going on and, kind of explaining in a way. Just to unpack all that, it was literally for us to communicate with our fans. Whereas before, it had always kind of come from a label standpoint where they would be the ones dropping the news and they would be, you know, which is somewhat unnecessary now.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you know, the only thing that we really can gain as a positive to social media and things like that is that you are a direct line to your fan base and you can choose how open you'd like to be in that. We chose to go the route where we could engage and learn from our fans and take input. And I think that was really the most beautiful part about it, because now these kids that come out, you know, the people on the street team have got like back patches. So it's like, we have a crew that will show their love and support, and we'll always be there. And we'll always recognize them. And it's just been a really, I think, a positive thing. The only downside to crowdfunding was that we weren't the greatest at, you know, being businessmen, because all we want to do is play rock and roll, you know?
Of course.
So having to do all the things ourselves, or like, you know, outsource to get things done, it just felt like something we didn't really want to have to do.
Right. It's more of a chore. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
Well,
but it was great. I mean, I love it though. And I really do think that young bands, should think about that option if they are playing shows and rolling around. Like, I mean, that might be the way to go, rather than to, you know, romanticize what a record label could be. As you and I know, it's like, you know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. I mean, it's a getting and writing situation. You know?
Absolutely, man. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. I appreciate you doing this today, but I have a few things I still have to talk to you about. I mean, one thing is just your voice. You know, being a guy that pretty early on cemented himself as one of the best singers and screamers, you know, doing both, because that was at a time, you know, I was doing it, a few other people were, but not everybody was. And now, just, you know, how you've come into your own with your voice, both singing, you know, melodically and heavy.
Yeah.
And also just lyrically, I think you've really been in your own league, in terms of the way you write lyrics, and I almost feel like, maybe I'm way off base here, but I feel like you sometimes take on a character in your lyrics, like with the what you're saying and the attitude, and I almost feel like you're giving me a performance like out of a film, like you're an actor, which is very unique for a rock and roll singer. I know I'm going way all over the place with this question, but these are just all the things that I take when I think of Skylar from He Is Legend. I think of these things, of a talent and a versatility, and also just this like, you're almost like an actor, but you're a singer.
I think that, first of all, that's very flattering, and I really do appreciate that coming from you. That means a terrible lot, you know. I have always loved film more, you know, more than most things, and through working in film as a prop master, or, you know, like a decorator or whatever, you get to read scripts, and really it being on the set of a film changes the way that you view that art form, that medium, as well as your own, you
I'm
know,
sure all it, entertainment, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, it's a crazy thing to watch, you know, how they film like random scenes. I always loved in that, I would get, being a prop master especially, I would get to do breakdowns of these scripts. So, you know, I'm like, I'm imagining these things as I'm reading these scripts, and I get these ideas for stories through that. But yeah, I mean, I've got screenplays and whatnot that I've been working on for ages, just on the road with like ideas in my head, and translating that into music a bit is one of my favorite things to do, is to play a character of just whatever interesting story. I mean, granted, I think all of it is about, good music's about love, whether you got it, whether you don't, you know, I mean, those are the songs that are really breaking through. And by love, I mean the passion of what you are going through, your emotional turmoil, or, you know, elation. It's all these things that if you can pass off your emotions through lyrics and through just general tone, that to me makes a dope rock song.
And, right.
Or, you know, any sort of song. I just think there's an amount of that I could fake with a character, to where it might not be something that I'm feeling or I'm going through or have been through, but I know what it feels like to I don't know, try to express that as someone else, just in seeing it, reading a story, taking a character from a book, you know. That's just always been fun to me. I grew up on Joy Division and Nick Cave and Tom Waits and the Misfits and all this, you know,
right,
all this
right.
goth and punk rock, but also like anything dark, you know, that darkness was always what I was into. So these storytellers, even some like Bob Dylan and the Beatles, and the way that they would just kind of write these cinematic songs, and yeah, of course, tongue in cheek, but it's still, it told the story that I wanted to get across, or the ones that I love, you know. I go back to the old Stagger Lee situation of, like, you know, telling a story about a guy who's just a badass who, like, you know, does the most crass things in a bar, and the fact that story lives on as, like, you know, different characters, different people play it in different ways. That's like, that's such an interesting thing to me. That's
totally.
So I mean, that's what I always wanted to do. Granted, I have written from, like, you know, first person experiences, but also, you know, I'm writing lyrics for four or five other guys to be passionate about, you know. And normally being selfish in that matter would be like, I didn't write the song 100% myself. So
do you bounce the lyrics off the other guys in the band before you do them? Like, because that's always a weird band dynamic that doesn't get talked about a lot. Like, because, you know, every band is different. Some bands, the lyrics are written very early on, and the other band members want to know what the singer's going to do. Other times it's like they record all the music, like, polished, and then it's like, okay, do your thing, singer. Like, get in there and do whatever, and we don't really care. In fact, I've done a lot of records where the band hasn't even been there when I recorded my vocals. So how has it worked with you guys?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter. I mean, it's definitely that Adam and I have such a formulaic relationship when it comes to music, is I've never ever once questioned the way that he will phrase songs, you know. And not that I don't think he, not that he doesn't write to with vocals in mind, and I'm sure he probably does. It's, we've never once had an instance where we've bounced anything back and forth. It literally is a, now hand the baton off, you know.
Wow.
like
cool,
it's your turn. And that being said, I mean, I'm sure that there are things that possibly people didn't like. It's never been brought to my attention. It's always been, dude, this is sick. But, you know, we have a symbiotic relationship in that way where I think we all feel what this is like, you know. And for me, when working with Adam and stuff, we explain things in just depictive words, you know. Like, I mean, I won't say like go up, make it a minor, whatever. There, it'll be like kind of like the river when it's foggy out. Like, you know,
right,
it's not as close to the bank of the Cape Fear, you know. Or like, you know, it's, this one sounds like, it sounds more like that monster from Looney Tunes running through the walls, you know, Gossamer running through the walls. But those are things that we will, that he can pick up on. I mean, I have one of the best guitar players on the planet, in my personal opinion. I've never, you know, like, never questioned it. He is such a prodigy and such so ahead of his time when it comes to like metal guitar. He is the best in my opinion. So I mean, I'm every time we lay something down, I'm just like so excited to hear how what is going to come.
Well, that's very cool that you guys have so much trust in each other, you know. And I'm sure if I talked to him, he would say the same about you. So that's an amazing relationship you guys have had for 15 years or more. And
yeah, man.
And sky's the limit, man. So what's going on next with the band? I know you can't talk about it, but I assume more music, more records, more touring.
Yes,
what can your fans expect?
I mean, we'd love to be bouncing around the globe, you know, in the next, I'd like to get around at least once before the end of the year, but I think a lot of touring's coming up. And you know, we're just kind of, we're in the dugout right now, you know, having a little, we're in the locker room. So
okay. Okay.
You know what I mean? So
yeah. Gonna get on the on deck circle and swing the bat a little bit, before you get to the plate. I'm down with the baseball analogies, dude. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, we're warming up. You know, we're like a couple people are out in the field throwing a ball back and forth. You know, nothing. People still have time to go get a hot dog.
But you're from North Carolina. It should be a basketball analogy, shouldn't it?
It should be. I went to Michael Jordan's high school, but to be honest with you, I don't follow any sports at all. I have no idea. I pick up shifts at a bar.
Right. Oh, it's always on, I guess. Yep.
And there's all these TVs in this bar, and I work like one day a week there. It's a chill time. It's daytime, you know, so I get golfers coming in wanting me to put it on, and I always just fake it really well with them. Just like, yeah, man, football. Awesome. No, this is golf.
Well, that's all good, man. Well, dude, thanks. I look forward to everything you guys have coming up, and it really is nice to catch up after all these years. I hope we run into each other, who knows where, but I'm sure it'll happen.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm sure we'll end up in the same spot sooner or later.
Yeah, man. And sorry about all the...
It's been a long time coming, man. It's good to talk to you.
You too, man. And sorry about all the rescheduling and everything that's happened over the last
little
while.
No worries.
But it's really great to catch up, man.
Yeah, definitely, Shane. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
man.
Take care, Skylar. All the best, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, yep, see you. So there it is with Skylar. Eye-opening stuff, an amazing career, an amazing comeback, and a guy that's still so humble, and a band that I think is making by far the best music of their career. I want to thank Skylar so much for taking the time and doing this. And I want to thank you so much for listening to this thing. Make sure you're subscribed. If you like the show, please write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. And if you don't like the show, well, let's just keep it our little secret. As always, I will leave you with a tune. I did an old banger in the beginning. How about a new banger now? Here is the latest song, the latest single from He Is Legend, and a good one. Here is Sand on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and we'll see you next week.